Imagine the exercise of loving something so deeply you know you could never leave it completely, and then going through exposing every flaw. That's the exercise that Alfredo Corchado, who is the Mexican bureau chief for Dallas Morning News, has accomplished, painfully, I imagine, in his latest book, Midnight in Mexico. Welcome, Alfredo. It's so good to have you here.
Monique, it's a pleasure to be with you.
This is such a powerful focus in this book. Let's go back. Let's start chronologically here. You were born in Durango, Mexico. Now, at what age did you come to the U.S.?
At the age of six. I came to Ciudad Juarez at the age of four, and then, at the age of five, and then California at six.
All right. And you lived in California and Texas?
California, San Joaquin Valley. My father was a bracero. Mm-hmm. And then later, we moved to El Paso. So I could get an education. I dropped out of high school in California, and my mother wanted me to get an education and felt El Paso was the right place.
You actually worked in the fields. You were a farm worker alongside your parents.
Alongside my parents, who were members of the Cesar Chavez Union in that time.
Yes. So enter the political aspects. Do you feel like that influenced your thinking?
You know, I think what influenced me more as a kid was when Robert F. Kennedy was killed.
Oh, really?
And my mother dangling the radio, and there was this speech that Robert F. Kennedy would give. Some men see the way things are and ask why. Others dream of things that never were and ask why not. And that was something my mother would always make us understand, make us remember. It was her way of telling us this is why we came to the U.S., because you can do things here.
Mm-hmm. Did they maintain their ties to Mexico?
Very much so. Even though my mother felt that Mexico was behind us, she often would say, Mexico is our burden, not yours. You know?
Interesting way to put it. Our burden, not yours.
Right. It's a way of cut the strings, not culturally, not linguistically, but this is your new country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I think I was very rebellious and didn't understand why we left Mexico. You know, I would often question, we had a house in Mexico. We had a store. We had a grocery store. We could walk to my grandmother's house for caldo de res, and now we're in the fields in the trailer house.
So trying to make sense of that.
Exactly. And so my mother would constantly, you know, continually remind me why we came, and now it was because of an education.
You were one of how many children?
I am the oldest of nine.
Of nine children. Are your parents still living?
They're still alive, thank God.
Okay. Now let's talk about this particular book. Can you tell me the genesis of the book, the story behind your needing to write it?
I think I needed to, more than anything, to explain to myself why Mexico went through what it's going through, this whole transformation. I think these are challenges, these are changes that mark my life as a boy and later as a reporter. Half my life has been spent in Mexico, either as a boy or as a correspondent for the Dallas Morning News. I also did some stuff for the El Paso Herald Post and the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. So it's a front row view, firsthand witness to all these changes from the administration of Carlos Salinas de Gortari to the current administration of Enrique Peña Nieto.
Now, this book, for the sake of our listeners who might not still realize what the gist of the book is, it, of course, explores the tremendous numbers of disappearances and deaths, and including more than 70 journalists killed since 2006, all related to the cartels and the drug war. But I want to back up, stay with the chronology a little bit and ask you, so you dropped out of high school, and then you know you're here for the education, but you have this need to understand better how they could leave what you knew as home. How did you reunite with the educational stream, and did you choose journalism or did it choose you?
That's a great question. I think in some ways it really chose me. I was a 13-year-old kid working in the fields with my parents, and a TV crew came up and was doing an interview on what it was like working in the fields, the conditions, lack of water, lack of sanitation.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to me, and there was a law that you had to be 15 or older to be out in the fields. So my mother would put this, big shirt, a hat, try to make me look older. And obviously these reporters were pretty smart. They came up to me and asked me all these questions. And afterwards, my mother was terrified that even though we had green cards, that we were going to be deported. But it left, I think it marked me, like, it gave me a sense of someone wants to know what I think. Someone wants to give me a voice. And I think even after I dropped out of high school, that thought always kind of stayed with me. Like, you know, what would it be like to be a reporter? When the chance came that I could actually be a foreign correspondent and someone would pay me to go back to Mexico, that was like, it doesn't get better than that.
Well, and you've touched on something that we know the power of the media based on what we see through the screen or hear through the radio, but there's the power of the media to influence the lives of those on whom they turn the light. And you're one of those who was changed by that exposure. So you proceeded to graduate from
El Paso Community College.
Community College, right here. Right. Then from UTEP. Did you continue your education past that point?
No, I later was able to get a couple of fellowships, one at Harvard, actually two at Harvard and one at the Woodrow Wilson Center in D.C.
Ah, yes. Poor slow lad. You just couldn't quite. No, hugely, hugely impressive. Now, how many years did you have in Mexico as the bureau chief there for Dallas Morning News before the crisis hit? And if you would explain what the crisis was.
Well, there was actually two crises. And one thing that I think it's important to try to stress is that this is not really a book about narcos, but it's really set in the backdrop of the drug war. Mm-hmm. I actually arrived in Mexico during the first crisis, which was 1994. This was the Peso economic crisis.
Ah, yes.
And then the second crisis obviously came after the PAN victory, the opposition party in the 2000s. And shortly after that, we started seeing Mexico, if you will, you know, come undone. 2002, 2003, 2004. When I arrived in Mexico, I did not want to cover the narco beat. I mean, that was not my interest. Mm-hmm. And I think eventually all of us ended up becoming kind of police reporters, if you will. Because I think like most Mexicans, I was one of those who did not want to see the reality of Mexico. I was so captivated by the beauty, by the food, by the music, et cetera.
Well, you also know that the monster in the underground is it'll eat you.
Right.
It'll get you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, in some ways, that's what made me descend into darkness, if you will, the title of the book, Midnight in Mexico, because in some ways I was very naive. You know, as you said in the opening statement, I mean, I still consider myself, what was I thinking about, you know, as I look back? And in that spirit, I went after the story like any other story, and yet this wasn't any other story.
Well, it's the same journey in a way, becoming a parent. What was I thinking?
Right,
because you just
right.
can't fathom how difficult it can become. And the subtitle is A Reporter's Journey Through a Country's Descent into Darkness. But it was yours, too. You ended up with death threats. You were told you were the next target for the Zetas. And apparently, instead of scurrying away, you decided to try to investigate the threat, the nature of the threat.
There had been three threats previous, and as a reporter, you kind of learn to understand that there are always going to be threats, you know, mm-hmm. especially when you cover organized crime. The last one came from a very trusted source, U.S. source, and he said there were three journalists that came up, and you're one of them. At that point, I wasn't sure whether coming to the U.S. was the right thing to do. Some people, and including close friends, have said it was reckless. I do agree that there was some reckless in part of me. But the other thing was that I have family on both sides. I have friends on both sides. So I felt at that point that it was best to find out what was behind this. And if there was a way for mm-hmm. me to communicate with these people, I would.
Yeah,
say, look, it's nothing personal. I'm just a reporter.
But as long as you have anybody you care about, that you are not just a sole target. You have a great big bullseye.
And I also had to have a U.S. passport, which gives you a sense of protection that my colleagues in Mexico don't have.
Well, yes, that's true. Very true. This book deals with, of course, your personal journeys. But tell me a little bit more about the bigger picture, the overview that maybe has come into better focus for you as you worked on the book?
You know, in many ways, it was a way I think, to heal the soul, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It was a way to find answers. And it was also a way to understand Mexico better and learn to be patient. That change in Mexico is coming. I see it. I mean, I've been there more than 20 years now. But it's slow change. And as an American, I think one of the good things and bad things for Mexico is that it's so close to the United States, and there's so many expectations. There's so many, you know, people thinking, okay, why haven't you changed it? You go to other countries in Latin America, Brazil, Colombia, Guatemala, and you see Mexico through a different lens, and you see it through a different perspective, and you take a step back, and you know that there is a civil society that's growing. There's growing accountability,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the United States, and it shouldn't be the United States. You know, it's a slower pace,
mm-hmm.
but the change is there. I've always been inspired as a reporter to see the courage of the people. I mean, the spirit of Mexicans, los luchones, no, the fighting spirit that they have. And that gives you a sense of a purpose to continue writing.
Absolutely. For those of us who live on the border, this is just an essential read, I think, to gain perspective. And it's almost like you've done the dirty work. You've lived the reality. We get to read about it. And you have, for your work, you've received the Maria Moores Cabot Award from Columbia Journalism School. That was in 2007 for extraordinary bravery and enterprise. And in 2010... you received Colby College's Elijah Paris Lovejoy Award for Courageous Journalism. And when you pair those two words, journalism and courageous, you know, somebody really got down to a scary level in their work. Now, we will get to enjoy you next Friday, June the 7th. You'll be here in El Paso at Barnes & Noble, 7 p.m. And that's the one on Sunland Park Drive. Will you be reading or signing?
I will be doing both.
Excellent.
Reading and signing books.
And your tour, give me just a quick ping pong report on where you're going to be.
It's
all over
the country. Texas. We start with Texas, California, and then the East Coast, back to Texas, the Northeast, and Arizona, Seattle. And then the book is released in Spanish later this year, later in the fall. So it'll be Mexico. And then next year it'll be released in Italian. So it'll be Italy.
Wow, excellent, excellent. Well, this book, Midnight in Mexico, is available by order at Amazon.com. You can also get it as an e-book. You can get more information on it by going to midnightinmexico.com. And, of course, next Friday you can meet, listen to, and speak with the author, Alfredo Corchado, and that will be at Barnes & Noble, 7 p.m., the one on Sunland Park Drive. Alfredo, it's an honor to meet you, and I congratulate you on this tremendous, tremendous work.
Monica, it's my pleasure to be here, and thank you.